Okay, good morning, everyone. Happy Lag BaOmer to one and all. Today's shiur is only loosely connected to yesterday's parsha. The beginning in Parshas Emor, we have the parsha of the Moadim. The second half of the parsha deals very much with the halachas of the Yom Tovim, and it begins with a brief discussion of Shabbos. So I figured that it might be an opportunity to sneak in another topic in the Hilchos Shabbos, which is relevant, very relevant to us. It always has been, and something that it's worthwhile trying to get clear. The topic is the issue of Schar Shabbos, which is a person taking wages for Shabbos. This is a common occurrence, a common issue, and applies in a lot of different ways. It applies, obviously, for work done directly on Shabbos, that would not, obviously, the melacha one cannot do on Shabbos, but there are certain services that a person can render on Shabbos that are permissible, such as, for example, simple case of a child or young person babysitting on Shabbos would be an example. A Rav giving a drasha, chazan davening for the Amid, a Balkari laning, would be examples, but it also extends to other areas which people aren't always so familiar with, and that is situations where you're taking money for Shabbos, not necessarily for services, but for other things provided. For example, renting out a hall for a kiddush on Shabbos, which is commonly done today. Very common that shuls build simcha halls or social halls, which they have part of their intent is that they're going to rent it out for simchas. It'll be a hachnas, it'll be a source of income for the shul. But in effect, the person who is renting that is paying for the use of the room on Shabbos. So I'd like to try to get to the bottom of this halacha and see how it applies. Just one other example where we may not take it into consideration where it applies would be, theoretically, a person who has a bank account or some sort of brokerage account where the interest is compounded daily. So a part of the interest that's being paid is for Shabbos. So the question is, how does one deal with this? So essentially there are two Gemaras that touch on this topic. Neither of them are found in Masechta Shabbos, which we know that one of the reasons why a person really has to try to learn through the entire Shas the best that they can is because of the fact that the halachos and the Shas are not necessarily organized or arranged topically, even though we have Masechtas that specifically deal with certain topics. Like I have a whole large Masechta called Shabbos, but it does not deal with all the laws of Shabbos. And one would have to look in other Masechtas to see some aspects of the Hilchos Shabbos. This would be an example. So we have here on the sheet on page 1, the Gemara tells us in Masechus Bav Metzian, Daf Nun Ches. Okay, so we'll skip the first 2 lines. We'll start 3 lines from the top. The Gemara brings a brisa, which states as follows. Hasocher es hapoel, a person who hires a poel, who hires a worker, lishmar es hatinok, to watch, excuse me, lishmar es hapara, a person who hires a worker to watch a para on Shabbos. Okay, what does that mean that he's to watching an ox on Shabbos, a cow on Shabbos? So most, the Rishonim learn that what's being referred to here is not just a regular cow, but a para aduma. Okay, the para aduma in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the para aduma was an extremely valuable commodity because of the fact that a person who has been subjected to the tumas mace cannot get out of it. The person cannot become purified without being sprinkled with the ashes of para aduma. In fact, today, that is the great impediment, other than political reasons. If anyone ever had the idea that let's go, we have control of Eretz Yisrael, let's go rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what stands in the way, because of the fact that a person can't go into the Makom HaMikdash with Tamei Lameis, and that situation is, you know, the Harabayis, the peripheral area, a person could go Tamei Lameis, just the other Tumas that a person has to be concerned about. But the actual Makom HaMikdash, a person cannot go Tamei Lameis, and that's so, and we have nothing we could do about it because we don't have a Parah Aduma. Okay, the Parah Aduma is an extremely valuable commodity. Now, it happens to be that the Torah, if you look in the beginning of Parashas Chukas, when the Torah speaks out the laws of the Parah Adumah, so one of the aspects that's mentioned is that that the Parah Adumah could never have been used for work. It never could have been used for work. So, how does one know that the Parah Adumah that you come across has not been used for work? How do you know that? So what they did was, when they came across such a cow, which was a semi-miraculous event, very, very extremely rare to have such a thing, a red cow, okay, but they would guard it very, very carefully. They would guard it. They had guards that was their job. They were paid to watch the Parah Adumah we need this. This is very valuable. Okay, so for that reason, the Braisa here discusses a person who is paid to guard the Parah Adumah. Okay, similarly, there's a related issue is that the people who processed the Parah Adumah had to be bitahara, had to be purified. Now, in order to be pure, a person could be tame, even a kohen theoretically could become tame. There are ways to deal with that, but the kohen, the people who processed it had to be 100% bitahara, and therefore in the times of Beis HaMikdash, they would have young children who were watched from the time they were born that they should not be subjected to tumah. And they would draw the water which would be used together with the ashes of the Parah Adumah to purify people. Okay, so a child, it seems an amazing thing to us, but they had young children that from the time they were born, with the parents' consent, they were raised in certain places that were constructed in such a way that they were tumah-free, that they could not be exposed to tumah, and they grew up there until they were old enough to go ahead and draw the water for the sprinkling of the Parah Adumah. So this was the second example here, Lishmar es Hatinok, that a person would be hired in the times of the Chazal, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that is, for the purpose of guarding a child. Lishmar es Hazroyim, or a simple case where a person is hired for the purpose of guarding a field, says the Braisa, Ein Nosen Lo Schar Shabbos, that you are not allowed to pay this person Schar Shabbos. In other words, if you're hired a person, these people had to work every single day. They had to, the Parah Adumah, you couldn't take your eyes off it. There had to be constant supervision, and so too this child, right? So a person who had a field that was growing a lot of crops would, on his own, not want that ever should be without supervision. So the halacha is, says the Braisa, you cannot pay wages for Shabbos. Why not? So I regret that there was a misunderstanding here. When the sheet was printed, it was printed without the Rashi. So the reason that's given is because a gzeira of mekach u'memkar, because of the fact that the rabbis forbade doing business on Shabbos, and they forbade further along those lines anything that resembled doing business on Shabbos. So therefore, to receive wages for work done if you allowed that, it could confuse a person into thinking that, okay, I could do business on Shabbos also. So therefore, these things were forbidden. Okay, says the Braisa, going back to the Braisa here, Lefikach, therefore, Ein Achrayis Shabbos Olav. Therefore, such a person really would not have to watch on Shabbos. Because of the fact, if you were hired to watch the Parah Adumah, they can't pay you for Shabbos anyway. So therefore, if something should happen on Shabbos, and you didn't do your job properly, and something happened, or you were a watchman of a field, and something was stolen from the field, you don't bear any responsibility because of the fact that you can't be paid for Shabbos. Okay? Continues the Braisa, Hayas, however, Haya Schir Shabbos, Schir Chodesh, Schir Shana, Schir Shavua. However, if the person was hired by the week, or by the month, or by the year, or by a 7-year cycle, like the Shemitah cycle, person was hired for an extended period of time, a long-term contract, so then, Nostim Lo Schar Shabbos, then you are allowed to pay that person the Schar Shabbos. Lefikach says the Gemara, says the Braisa, Achrayis Shabbos Olav. Therefore, the responsibility for Shabbos would be on such a person. This concept that, in other words, the Braisa is saying that if the person is hired on a day-by-day basis, then you cannot pay them for Shabbos. You can't pay. Ain nos and los chas Shabbos. However, if the person is paid for a week at a time or more than that, beyond a month at a time, etc., so then the halacha is that that person would be allowed to be paid for Shabbos. What's the reason? So this is the well-known concept of what we call havla. This is the heter of havla. Havla means that what you're paying, that the payment for Shabbos is being put together, it's being absorbed together with payments that are made for other days of the week. And therefore, in such a situation, the Braisa tells us that it would be mutter. Okay, now why is that? You'll ask, why should it be that if it's paid by Havlah that it's mutter? So the way it's explained is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav explains that the idea is that if a person is paid on and this is a point that needs to be clarified, Havlah means that the payment that's being made is being made together with other payments. However, it's not just that I'm paying you for other things at the same time, but rather it's because you see here from the Braisa that I'm paying the person for a whole job, meaning you're paid by the month. If you're paid by the month, then Shabbos is included. Okay, the reason for that is because you're not on a day-by-day basis. You could not walk away from the job on any given day. Whereas, if you have a month contract, or let's say a year's contract, so you have to honor the contract. You have to work every day during that year. So Shabbos is just another day amongst the days of the year. So this is all part of a deal that you're working for the year. Whereas, if a person is working on a day-by-day basis, being paid daily, but the boss, the employer, comes and says that I will pay you for Shabbos together with other days, that's not good. That's not havlah. It's a common mistake that people make, that's not called havlah because of the fact that really he's paying your job, your commitment is on a day-by-day basis. You could leave at any time if you wanted to. The only thing is that instead of paying you just for Shabbos, he's paying you for other days also. So how does that get around the problem? In other words, in effect, he's paying you for Shabbos. So yeah, when you get the check, you're also being paid for other things. But you're being paid for other days. But the wages of Shabbos are wages in their own right. Their wages in their own right. Each day was a separate day. And therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, that the correct understanding here of this braisa and the halacha, which we'll soon see in the Shulchan Aruch, is that in order for it not to be schar Shabbos, it has to be that the person is being paid for a block of time as one contract. It's one deal. Now, if you work for the month, so in any given month there are going to be four or five Shabbos, so be it. But you have a month's contract. Whereas on a day-to-day contract, where even though you're being paid more than just for Shabbos, that wouldn't escape from the issue of Schar Shabbos, because in the first case, the pshat is you're being paid for the month. You're being paid for the month, and you really could not, to honor your commitment, you could not have walked away at any time during that month. You were hired for the month. Whereas if you have a day-by-day arrangement, and it's just that you go per diem, for whatever day you're going to work, you'll be paid for. So then, all right, say, so work this day, that day, the other day. So even if he's paying you for 5 days at the same time, it doesn't help, because the fact is that you're being paid Shabbos as an entity in itself, and you could have, had you chosen to, you could have walked away after Shabbos. So, what's that? You add to lechatchila. I'm saying because of the fact that it's not called that you're being hired specifically for Shabbos. If you're being paid specifically for Shabbos, that's no good. That's where the chachamim made the gzeira. But if you're working for the month and one of the days is Shabbos, you have to work for the month. So good. Some of those days are going to be Shabbos. On such a case, the chachamim did not make the gzeira because of the fact that you're never being paid specifically for Shabbos. In other words, this is your wage for the month. It happens to be the Shabbos in that month. So, okay. But you're being paid for the month. Whereas if you're per diem, and you're just at the end, just for convenience, that you're being paid for a number of days together, so that doesn't escape the fact that you're taking the Schar Shabbos. So explains the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Okay, so that is the first source that we have here in the Gemara Bava Metzia. Okay, now we have similarly a Gemara in Ksubis. which is actually a very interesting Gemara and will shed some light, hopefully, on on an issue which we're going to get to soon. Okay, the Mishnah in Ksubis on Daf Samach Gimel tells us as follows. The Mishnah says, Hamoredes al Baila pochsin lo miksubasa shiva dinarim b'Shabbos. There is a halacha we know that when a couple gets married, so in the Ksuba, if you ever looked into it, it's an Aramaic, so very, you know, a lot of times we don't consider what it says. But the Ksuba delineates the obligations of a husband to a wife and a wife to a husband. And those obligations have to be met. It's a serious thing. A ksuba is a contract. A ksuba is an agreement, an understanding of different things. And even though today it's, you know, done artistically and sometimes hung on the wall, so that's okay. You could do that if you want. But essentially, it's a contract. It's a shtar. So the Mishnah here discusses, the Mishnah Maseches Ksubas discusses, what if a husband or a wife does not keep their responsibilities to the marriage. What responsibilities exactly is being discussed here is the machlokas in the Gemara. But the Mishnah says as follows, Hamoredes al Baila, a woman, the Mishnah speaks about a woman who does not keep the responsibility that she has towards her husband, okay, the marriage responsibility. So the halacha is that in such a case, the man is allowed to subtract money from the ksuba. In other words, the amount of money that he would have to pay her when the marriage ends could be subtracted because, you know, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. So the Mishnah here tells us a remarkable thing. The Mishnah tells us, Hamaredes al Baila pochsin lo miksubasa shiva dinarin b'Shabbos. The Chachamim made a penalty, that the penalty would be 7 dinarim. So dinar was a coin, the times in the Mishnah. 7 dinarim per Shabbos. Okay, which breaks down, for all the math majors, right, that breaks down to a dinner a day. A dinner, so every week it's 7 dinarim, so it's a dinner a day. Okay, now, the Mishnah, I don't know how much. Okay, the Mishnah then says further, the Mishnah, if you skip down to the end of the Mishnah, here we have a remarkable thing that raises the eyebrows of everyone who reads this Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, V'chein ha-morid al-ishto. What about a man who doesn't own up to his responsibilities? So what do you do in such a case? So, mosifin al-ksubasa. So in that case, the penalty is that he has to add money to the ksuba. Okay? He has to put more money into it. How much more money does he have to put into it? Says the Gemara, shlosha dinarim b'Shabbos. 3 dinarim for a week. Okay? 3 dinarim for a week. Not 7. So, yes.
What is she supposed to do?
So the shita that's accepted lahalacha, as it means in terms of marital relations, in terms of her relation, that she has to be willing to participate in that. If she says, I'm staying away, she's angry at her husband, that's called the Moredes al Baila. There are other opinions in the Gemara, but that's the opinion that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. That if you look here in the Gemara, Moredes Mimai, says the Gemara, Ravun Amar Mitash Shamita, from sexual relations, she doesn't want to be with her husband, so that would be considered a Moredes. And so to the man, that this would be a Mored al Ishto. Okay, so says the Gemara further, so the Gemara asks the obvious Kasha, the Gemara asks, if you look now, I apologize for the way it was done here because it's on two separate pages, but if you look at the next quote, the next section, 4 lines from the top, so the Gemara asks the question that Umayshna iu ihi d'lo yavinu lo d'shabbos. Excuse me, I'll start a drop before that. The Gemara asks the question, Umayshna iu d'yavinu lo d'shabbos. Umayshna ihi d'lo yavinu lo d'shabbos. So the Gemara asks the question that, you know, the numbers here, it doesn't seem to be fair, right? The woman is being penalized at a rate of a dinner a day, and the man is only 3 dinarim for the week. Okay, now included in that is the understanding that that by the woman it's clearly a day by day type of thing. It's 7 for the week, 1 per day. So the Gemara asks, why is it that she pays in that manner and he does not? Okay, says the Gemara, very interesting thing. Ihi demivches kapaches lo mechzi kischar Shabbos. Says the Gemara that by her, in the case of the woman, so you're subtracting from the ksuba. You're subtracting from the ksuba. So therefore, there is no issue of schar Shabbos involved. But e the osfi kamosfi, but in his case, where he has to add money to the ksuba, so in that situation, it appears like schar Shabbos. In such a situation, says the Gemara, that it appears like schar Shabbos, and here the quote got cut off, but that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that in the case of the woman, since the amount of money that's being paid is being subtracted, so we subtract on a day-by-day basis, and there's no issue. Whereas by the man, were we to add on a day-by-day basis, so you're adding money, your ksuba is getting larger and larger, so it would be mechzik eschar Shabbos, it would have the appearance of eschar Shabbos, and for that reason, the rabbis made it that you don't pay it on a day-by-day cheshbon, meaning that it's not, the lump sum doesn't come out to an amount that's breaks down to a dinner per day. That's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara goes further. The Gemara goes further into other explanations for why the man has to pay less than the woman. Without getting into it, that's the Gemara eventually ends up saying that it's because of the fact that it's more tzar for the man than it is for the woman in that situation. To be deprived of such a thing is a greater tzar for a man than it is for a woman, and that's why ultimately the payment is more for the woman. Payment is more than a man's payment. So concludes the Gemara. That's not for now. But the point is, what comes out of this Gemara is the fact that here we find an expression that we didn't find in the other place, and that is the Gemara puts in a word that we did not have previously. Mechzik eschar Shabbos. Mechzik eschar Shabbos means that it appears as if you're being paid for Shabbos. It appears as if you're being paid for Shabbos. Not necessarily that you are being paid for Shabbos, but it has the appearance as if you're being paid for Shabbos. Now, how is this relevant? So we have the following issue. If you look here in the Shulchan Aruch, which we have on the sheet, the Shulchan Aruch on page two, the second side. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch tells us lahalacha. The Shulchan Aruch says asocher es apol lishmar zroyim al davar acher, that if you hire a worker to guard your field, eino nosin lo schar Shabbos, you don't pay the wages of Shabbos. This exact quote from the Brisa, it's actually a quote from the Rambam, which is a quote from the Brisa. Lefikach ein achrayas Shabbos olav. Okay. Hoya schir Shabbos, schir Chodesh, schir Shana, schir Shavua, nosin lo schar Shabbos. Okay, so this is the halacha that we discussed based on the Gemara Bava Metzia, that the halacha is that there is an idea of schar Shabbos, and that can only applies in a situation where the person is being paid for the day. But if a person is being paid as part of a larger agreement, as part of like a contract that I'm being paid for the month or whatever, so then the halacha is that you don't pay for then the halacha is that there is no real concern, there's no problem of schar Shabbos, and the Shulchan Aruch says, v'lo yomar tainli shel Shabbos, that when you come the issue comes, even if it's done in this manner, that it's permissible, meaning even if you do it in such a way that you have a lump sum deal that I'm paying you for the week or I'm paying you for the month, but when you come to collect payment, you should not say, give me the money for Shabbos. You shouldn't say that. Rather, the person should say, Tein li schar ha-shavua, o ha-chodesh. Right? You should say, give me the money for the month. Don't, you should not delineate specifically, give me the money for Shabbos, but you could remind the person that you worked for them every single day, including Shabbos, but you should not be toveya, a person should not come and claim the money for Shabbos. And by the way, just a point which should be taken into consideration, that this prohibition of schar Shabbos applies both to the pay, not only to the receiver, not only to the recipient of the money, but also to the person who pays it. In other words, the person who receives it is not allowed to take it, but the person who pays it is over on the Israel Fneiva Lasite Michel. That you're not supposed to be an accomplice to an avera. You're not supposed to facilitate an avera. So by you paying this person, it's wrong. Essentially, it's wrong for the person to take the money, because taking the money for Shabbos is similar to doing business on Shabbos. However, the person who pays it is also wrong because of the fact that this is an issue of Lufnei Velositim Mishum.
How do you insinuate, you know, the fact that when you hire the cantor?
Yeah. And again, right now. So, okay. So having said all this, so where do we stand? So far, we have a very simple understanding, okay, which is a simple, heter, way to deal with it. A person who is, you know, typically in an arrangement that he has to work on an ongoing basis. So let's say you had, in the old days, you don't see it so much anymore, but there used to be the person in the shul was called the shamish of the shul, the person who was like the made sure that everything was put away. Today the gaborim do it generally free of charge from what I understand, but it used to be a paid position in a shul. You still have large shuls where they actually pay someone for those services, and the person says Kaddish and does all kinds of this, or sometimes reads the Torah, whatever it may be. So that person is working on a ongoing basis. There's no question that person can be paid. He can be paid for Shabbos too, because that's his contract. That's his contract. He's being paid for, you know, so a rabbi in a shul, so he's being paid for the year, or whatever it is, so it includes Shabbos. Obviously, a main part of his function is to preside over the davening on Shabbos and Yontif, but nevertheless, he does many things the rest of the not on Shabbos and Yontif, so that's all part, as long as it's not a day-by-day contract, as long as it's not a per diem arrangement. There's no problem. Outright, there's no problem. The clear heter, this is the heter of Havlah, because of the fact that you're not focusing on Shabbos. You're not focusing on Shabbos, that's a heter.
He's just from outside. You don't have it.
Comes in for Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, good, I get there right now. So now the question comes up. Good, fine. So that's it. That, you're one step ahead of me. So now comes the question that this was all fine and good for arrangements such as the ones that we just mentioned. However, what about a person who works just for Shabbos? For example, about Korea, right? A person who comes to lane, he's being paid only for, that's what he's doing. He's laning on Shabbos. Or very commonly when it comes to Yom HaNoraim, so you have the people, you know, hired out to be Chazonim, where it's only for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that's it. It's only Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the person is Baal Shachris, Baal Musaf, Baal Tekeah, whatever it is. Those jobs are jobs that are being done specifically on those days. So you can't say here that, well, he's being paid for the rest of the year. He's not. This is a very specific contract, a very specific arrangement that includes only days that you can't be paid for. Right? In other words, we're hiring you to daven to be the Baal Musaf on the Yom Narayim, so what is that going to include? You'll daven Musaf on the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, right? Maybe we'll throw Neil into the deal also, right? So then you have it. So that's it. He's being paid for those days. So what is the heter for this? So it happens to be that this generated in the Rishonim a great deal of controversy, and I just want to say, as an apology, the sheets here were made late last night, and I was not around, so this was omitted. So bear with me, I'll read to you a very interesting thing that it says we find in the Torah in the Halachas of Rosh Hashanah, and this has a very big bearing on Halachas, we'll soon see in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, it says as follows. It says, the Shulchan Aruch is talking about how important it is to get a person to blow the shofar, who's a good person and so forth, and knows what he's doing, so that people don't get confused. He's able to blow the shofar, people can follow along. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says, that v'chein ol minig ba'ashkenaz, that the custom was amongst the Ashkenazic Jews, she'gedolei ha'ir makdimin litkoa, kol misha zariz bo yoser, that the great people, the outstanding members of the community would always be willing and eager to blow the shofar. There were always people that you could turn to, you know, please could you blow the shofar for us? You're such a wonderful person, you have such a fine reputation, we'd like you to blow the shofar. And there was always a ready supply of people to perform that service, and therefore it was never an issue. However, get ready for this. However, he says, Avol, says the Shulchan Aruch, Masha Ein Kein Bisfarad. However, amongst the Sephardic Jews, I'm reading this from inside, I'm not adding anything. Alright, Masha Ein Kein Bisfarad, says the Torah, Sheborchen Min HaMitzvah, that they run away from the mitzvah ad shetzrichim liskar echad min ashuk litkalahem. And there they had to actually go out and hire someone. Nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. Now, it could be in defense of the Sfarim, it could be that they were so humble that nobody wanted to feel that he was great enough to take on this mitzvah. What's that?
Much bigger shofar.
Much bigger shofar. Okay, that could be intimidating. Okay. No, okay. All right. Okay. So this is written 500 years ago. So don't worry. You know, it could be things have changed since then. But the fact is, the fact of the matter is that at that time, he reports that in the Sephardic community, people did not want to blow the shofar. It doesn't say why. It says, Barchen min ha-mitzvah, is unlikely that it means that they had no interest in doing the mitzvah. It could be other considerations, you know. It could be that, you know, people felt the truth be told, he was quasi-Ashkenaz, quasi-Sephard. His father was an Ashkenazic Jew who ran to Spain to avoid being taken captive. The Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, was the Talmud of Marame Rottenberg, Rav Meir of Rottenberg, a very famous person amongst the Ashkenazim, the greatest of the Ashkenazic poskim, was a rabbi in Germany, and he was kidnapped and held for a huge ransom in the prime of his life, and this was a very big issue. It's discussed. It became a very big sugya. It's brought in the Rosh of Maseches Gittin, in the sugya of Pidyon Shvuyim, how far you're supposed to go to ransom a captive, because they were asking, they were wealthy Jews in Germany, and they were asking for a very, very exorbitant amount of money to ransom him. So the Marame Rottenberg himself, from prison, sent out the psak that I should not be ransomed. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's usser. Don't do it. I have to stay here in jail. You can't do it. Because his reasoning was, because if you give in to this, they'll do it more, they'll do it again, you're not going to solve anything, and therefore he paskin that he had to stay in jail, and his student, his prime student, Rabbeinu Asher, we know as the Rush, who was living in Germany at the time, did not agree. He didn't agree halakhically. This argument can be found in the Rosh in the fifth parak of Maseches Gittin, and he strongly disagreed, because he said that there is no value for an Adam Gadol. There's no, because the Mishnah there in Gittin says that you don't redeem a captive for more than his worth. So the Rosh said that there is no value that you could put on a Gadol Ador. It's priceless. You know, like the American Express commercials, right? It's priceless. So such a thing is priceless. So therefore, you can't put a value on it, and therefore you have to be willing to pay anything. However, the Marame Rottenberg did not agree. He did not agree, and he remained in jail. He won out, and he remained in jail, and he died in jail. And in fact, they even had to eventually paid money to ransom his body. They wouldn't even release the body for kfura for a long time until a wealthy person stepped forth and paid the money. This is an aside, but as a result of this, the consequence of this was that the Rush himself felt that he was next, that once this was happening to his Rebbe, that he was probably going to be targeted. So he picked up and ran to Spain. And that was a much safer place for Jews to be at that time. And he lived out the rest of his life in Spain, although he himself was an Ashkenazi. So his son, Rabbeinu Yaakov Bal HaTurim, was the person who wrote the tour. So he is the person that I'm reading this from. But, okay, so whatever you want to consider him. But this is what he reported. He reported that by the Ashkenazim, this was, they had no problem with Tkiyah Shofar. People would blow the shofar happily. But amongst the Sfardim, they couldn't get it until they found someone to pay. They had to hire someone. Okay, Mashen came besvach barchem in a mitzvah ad shetzrichem liskar echad min ashuk l'tkolahem. Says this is actually the brother of the Torah, says Rabbeinu Yechiel, v'lo yadati me'ayin matzo heter zeh. He says, where did they get a heter for this? How are they allowed to do this? They hire a guy to blow the shofar? How could you do such a thing? After all, didn't we learn in this brisa in Bava Metzia that Asochras Apollo, Lishmar Apollo, you're not allowed to pay for Shabbos? So if you're not allowed to pay for Shabbos, you're not allowed to pay for Yontif. Sorry?
You're paying him for practicing.
Oh, well, we'll soon see. Hold on. 1 second. So that's what they said. So therefore, he said, I cannot understand what the heter for this is. So comes along the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef was written by the author of Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, Sephardic Jew. And he came to the defense of the Sephardic practice. And he says, he brings those who said that it would be usher. And then he quotes a shita of one of the Rishon Rabbeinu Shmuel, who said, you know why this is mutter? it's mutter to pay someone to blow the shofar because of the fact that blowing the shofar is a mitzvah. And because it's a mitzvah, therefore it's mutter. This is what he said. Now, conceptually, that doesn't make any sense, because you'll say, so what? So what if it's a mitzvah? What does that have to do with... The issue is, if the Rabbanan forbade being paid on Shabbos because of the fact that it resembles doing business, so what's the difference whether you're doing a mitzvah or doing a mundane thing? It's all the same concern. You're going to have the same consideration. So says the... So the Beis Yosef quotes... The Beis Yosef says the following remarkable answer. He says that if you recall the Gemara that we just read in Ksuvos, that the Gemara which speaks about the man who does not keep his responsibilities to the marriage and the woman who does not keep her responsibilities to the marriage. So the Gemara, when discussing the concern about Schar Shabbos, so it says over there that it's mechsi, that it appears that way. He says, "Umashma da fiu ave moses leki sura fiu midrabanan to ameka hu memker gufe lo mitzer elo midrabanan vehechi gazrinan b'more da sufe mosve otu meka hu memker avo exera lo exera elo vada lesle sura kwal fiu midrabanan elo de lasakein lo hosef lo chavchil lo rotsu chachamim mishum da have mechsi le inshikas chashavis." Says the Beis Yosef, that the basis for the heter was like this, because in the Gemara we saw that the reason why they, when it came to the man who has to add money to the ksuba, so they said, well, they don't want the man to add money for the ksuba on a day-by-day basis because it's going to appear like Schar Shabbos. So says the Beis Yosef a remarkable diuk in those words, that when the Gemara says it's mechzik a Schar Shabbos, it's not really Schar Shabbos. In other words, when we said at the outset that being paid for Shabbos is forbidden because it looks like you're doing business on Shabbos, so in fact, that's not really true in the way that we perceive it. Because that would be true, says the Beis Yosef, a person who hired himself out on Shabbos. If a person stood on Shabbos and said, you want to hire me? You need something done today? Yeah, I'm available. You know, I could help you out, different things. You need someone to daven musaf? You can't get, they go around the shul, nobody wants to daven. Okay, I'm available for 10 bucks, I'll daven musaf. So that is usur, because that is literally a situation where you're engaging in a business negotiation on Shabbos. However, where it's a question of being paid, you negotiate it before Shabbos, and it's just being paid for something that you're doing on Shabbos, so then the Beis Yosef says, you see in the Gemara that the Gemara used the expression mechzi k'schar Shabbos, that it appears that way, but in fact it is not really schar Shabbos. And therefore, being that it's only like a concern that the Rabbanan had, and b'mako mitzvah, the Rabbanan did not enforce this concern. In other words, if it was direct Schar Shabbos, if you're going to start negotiating on Shabbos, that the Rabbanan would not have allowed, even for Tekiah Shofar. Right? If a guy says, you know, I know how to blow, but it's going to cost you, right? That you could not do on Shabbos. However, if it's a situation where you hired the fellow in advance, and now it's just you're going to pay him for that day, so says the Beis Yosef, that is pshat in why some of the Rishonim say that it's permitted, because it's only a gzeira, it's not the real taking money for Shabbos, only a gzeira, and it is for a dvar mitzvah, and that, on that basis they would allow it. On that basis the Rabbanan would allow it. This is what the Beis Yosef says. But just to summarize, it comes out that this is not universally agreed upon. This is a chiddush. In other words, some say the Rabbeinu Yechiel that's quoted in the Torah says that I can't understand what the heter would be. How could they get someone to blow the shofar from Rosh Hashanah? How could that be? Whereas in the Beis Yosef, he brings from other Rishon, Rabbeinu Baruch, who says that no, that b'makom mitzvah it would be mutter. So with this in mind, yeah.
Everywhere it's going to be makom mitzvah.
Not necessarily. Well, not necessarily. What, to blow? Yeah, to daven, to blow. No, I don't know. Like to baby, to babysit on Shabbos is not b'makom mitzvah. That's not b'makom mitzvah. To rent out your hall on Shabbos is not b'makom mitzvah.
Yeah,
no, right?
That,
yeah. Yeah, good. That's not a mitzvah. So they have to have your hall. They go, so that's not a direct mitzvah. To blow the shofar is a mitzvah. To daven is a mitzvah. But to lain is a mitzvah.
The one I We'll get to that.
So now, like this. We'll get to it. Okay. So says the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch continues here on page 3. The Shulchan Aruch says now this discussion about whether it is mutter b'makom mitzvah or not is brought in the Shulchan Aruch in the form of two opinions. The Shulchan Aruch says Simon Shin Vav Sif Hey. It's not for some reason, I don't believe it's mentioned in the Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, but it's found in the Hilchos Shabbos, that it says, Aser liskor chazonim lispao b'Shabbos, that it is prohibited. Shulchan Aruch spun it toward Shabbos, the original issue was by Rosh Hashanah, that it is prohibited to hire chazonim to daven on Shabbos. That's the first opinion, Shulchan Aruch. And then he says, V'yesh mi shematir. V'yesh mi shematir means, and there are those that allow it. There are those that allow it. Comes, 1 second, comes the Ramah, and the Ramah says, quickly, if the person was hired on a year contract or a monthly contract, that would be no problem. So therefore, as we said at the outset, so therefore the chazan of the shul who is being paid for the whole year, and so that's different. That he has a year's contract. You're paying him for the year. He is hired by the shul for the year. So even though the days that his services are being needed are Shabbos and Yontif, nevertheless, but his deal is for, he has a year contract. That's what it says in the contract, that for this year, however you want to go by the Jewish year, the secular year, whatever it may be, that is right away puts it into the category of heter. However, when you're dealing specifically with, let's say, the Yom Narum, commonly by us, or a Balkare, a person going to lay every Shabbos, or on any given Shabbos, you don't have that. So that, for that, you have to come on to the first discussion. For that, you have, in other words, the Ramah is talking about the easy case where the person's hired for the year. But what about the person who is hired just for the occasion? So on this, we have two shitas. You have the shita of the first shita, which if you read the Shulchan Aruch, it seems clear is the primary shita. Generally, that's the case. The when it's presented in this manner, and it says v'yesh mi shamater, it's like an afterthought, meaning that the main opinion seems to be that it's prohibited. But yesh mi shamater. I'm sorry, Rabbi. It's including the weekdays, but I think by Chazan well, in other words, it says, so the truth of the matter is the Mishnah Berurah here says, if you look at Chav Dalet, the Mishnah Berurah says that the Lashana means she is Fal Gambi Mosachol. Okay, in other words, you're paying him for the year, that he'll also daven during the week. You're paying him also daven during the week. So, okay, so actually, it could be that if he didn't have to daven during the week and he only davened on Shabbos, maybe it would be different. But the fact is, you hired him out for the year, and he's gonna, you know, like typically a chazan in the shul performs other things as well, you know, so it's not just for Shabbos. Yes, I'm saying. It should say, yeah.
What I mean is, it should be, you can't pay a yearly salary for $150.
Oh, does it, you mean if it's clear that it's a way of getting around the system? I don't know. It could be that if that's whatever the market will bear, you know, if that's what people are paid for that service, so then that could be a yearly contract. I mean, if it's very clear that, you know, you're hiring a guy for Rosh Hashanah and you make a contract, I'm hiring you for the year, but I only expect you to show up on Rosh Hashanah, so that wouldn't be, right? That probably, I imagine wouldn't be. I'm sorry, yeah, yeah.
The way you read, I don't have a paper, but it sounded like you could read it two ways, either that he hired him out on Shabbos or he hired him for Shabbos.
No, so it's talking about that they hired him for Shabbos. If they hired him on Shabbos, there's nothing to talk about. So it seems. We'll see. So if you look here in the Mishnah Berurah, says Chav Beis that the Lispal B'Shabbos Mishum Shenotos Char Shabbos. So he says in Chav Gimel that the Yesh Mi Shematir holds that the Makom Mitzvah Lo Gazer Rabbanan, that since it's a Makom Mitzvah, this is the Rabbeinu Baruch, that the rabbis did not make the Gzeirah but Makom Mitzvah Al Schar Shabbos Bezeh. He says Umikom Makom Eino Roa Simin Bracha. Okay. However, we have a principle that a person who does such a thing, even if it's mutter, but he won't see a simon brother. This money won't be gebench the money. Meaning that if you want to make, it's hard to know exactly what that means. But in other words, not usser. If it was usser, they would say that it was usser, right? When it says, sometimes we find the expression halacha that in certain situations a person allowed to do it, but Zaina Roa Simon Bracha, he one of the person I think has brought a person who works on Tisha B'Av, says such a thing like that, that even though there's no official Isra Malacha on Tisha B'Av, but a person who does it is Zaina Roa Simon Bracha. So what does that mean? That means that essentially it's mutter, but it's frowned upon. It's frowned upon, and therefore a person who did that, probably, you know, if you invested that money, that investment probably isn't going to be the one that pays the big dividends. That could be Roa Simon Bracha.
That conflicts what we learned last week.
Right. Well, we're not getting involved in that, right? But that's what it says here, that it will be Eino Roa Simon Bracha. Okay, so how does this play out, Lamaisa? So in the recent times, they put out the Dirshu organization, Eretz Yisrael, has put out Mishnah Berurahs, which have accompanying the text of the Mishnah Berurah, has some notes and Piskei Halacha from the more contemporary Gedolim. So this question comes up: is this considered permissible to do or not if it's b'makom mitzvah? So he quotes here that from Rav Yashiv Zatzal that he says that anotel schar avur hartza toranis b'shabbos, that a person who takes a wage for a religious function that he's performing on Shabbos, afal pi shelichatchila yesh l'sader sheyia ba'ofen hamutter l'fikulam d'haynu b'avua. He says preferably the way to do it would be to structure the deal that is a havalah, meaning that you're being paid like the chazan. He'll do other things as well. So for example, there's a long-standing practice that the chazan of a shul, the yom naroim, the person who davens musaf, also comes the night of slichas to say the slichas. Right now, it's not, I mean, there are cantorial pieces in the slichas, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, most people at that hour of the night could live without a chazan, right? But nevertheless, the reason, one reason, interesting thing, perhaps, one reason why that's done is because if that's the case, then he's being hired for the Yom Narum season. He's not just being hired for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. He said slichas also. Slichas is said on Motzei Shabbos, that you're allowed to do. So when he's doing that, so that makes it already that I'm not paying you specifically for that. In other words, you're being hired to perform the Yom HaNarom duties. The Yom HaNarom duties include things that are done not on Shabbos and Yontif. Okay? And that would be permissible, says Rabbi Yashiv. He says, Mikol Makom, b'di'eved im lo osakein. He says, but if a person did not do that, or could not do that, yesh lismoch al hadeya hashnia hamavar b'shulchan aruch. He says that you could rely on the lenient opinion that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. But he says this only as a b'di'eved. In other words, preferably that should not be the case. That should not be the case. So therefore, in other words, if it came down to it, if a person agreed to perform these services in a shul on Shabbos, on Yontif, and for whatever reason he didn't know the halacha, or he didn't, didn't have time to work it out with them, and it comes down to it, they needed someone to lane, they called him up 10 minutes before Shabbos, we just realized the Balkari got sick, he can't come, can you come please, come tomorrow, we'll pay $100. So the halacha, and it didn't, you know, he didn't have time to discuss anything with them. He didn't know the halacha. He's allowed to take the money. Why is he allowed to take the money? Because according to the second opinion, it's mutter b'makom mitzvah, and b'makom mitzvah, this obviously b'makom mitzvah, that would be allowed. Okay, but preferably, a person should try to avoid those types of situations. So therefore, we have in the following cases, okay, so a moral who comes to do a bris on Shabbos, so you're paying him for the bris. So the way it should be viewed, and the moral should himself really bring this up, is that a mohel doesn't just do the bris, he also comes to check the baby in advance and he checks the baby afterwards. So it's a service that's being provided over a period of time. If it's a service that's being provided over a period of time, so Shabbos, it's a lump sum deal. That's havlah. That's havlah. In other words, again, havlah, it's not good enough that when you pay the person, you're also paying them for other things. That's a common misconception of what havlah is. That well, when I give you the money for Shabbos, I'll also give you the money for something else. The check won't be, I'm paying you $100 for Shabbos and $100 for something else, so I'll give you a $200 check. That solves the problem. That's not true. That's not havlah. Havlah is when you're paying the person for something that, in other words, what they did, the services rendered, included work beyond Shabbos. Included work beyond Shabbos. So a person who lanes can say that, listen, I have to prepare. I have to prepare. So when do you think I prepared? I prepared during the week, hopefully. Right? I prepared during the week. Or for that matter, if you hired a rav to give a drush or somebody to give a shir or something like that, I had to prepare. So I prepare during the week. So then, that's what you're paying me for. So don't, you know, you, it's true that I performed the service for you on Shabbos, but I was only able to do that because of work that I did before Shabbos. That, clearly, those situations would be mutter. But had that not been the case, now with a chazan, it's very hard to say that. Because if it's a chazan who just recently became a chazan, or he doesn't know the nusach so well, but because you need him to daven on Rosh Hashanah, so he's going to put in time beforehand in preparation, so then you can make the same case. However, if it's a veteran chazan who's davened many times on the Yom Narum, so he's not going to he prepared 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So what are you going to say? That it's not true. They always prepare? Okay, all right. Let's say that, okay. Let's say a Balkari. This I know people that they could, you could wake them up at 3 o'clock in the morning, so, you know, they could wake up from the dead and lane any parsha in the Torah without flinching. Okay, so such a person like that, what are you going to say? Well, wait, 30 years ago, he prepared. So that's highly questionable. Yeah.
That's the halakha. Even if he knows that by heart.
Yeah.
Well,
not too many people do that. That's all I can tell you. Okay, it could be that's what he should do. So what do you do in such a case? The halacha is in such a case that there it gets tricky. So there, see, if the person prepared in advance, so then you don't have to rely on the heter of makom mitzvah. In other words, there are two heterim. One is smooth and one is rough. The heter of havlah is a smooth heter. If you could get somehow into that boat, then you're in good shape. In other words, it's havlah because, all right, so I'm not just being paid for Shabbos. Okay? Whereas in a situation where you can't claim that, there are shuls where they pay people to come for a minyan. Right? So what are you going to say about that? Right? You have shuls like that. Sure. Right? They need a minion. They'll pay someone to whatever, a certain amount of money. Come daven by us. We have that situation in this neighborhood. Right? That they pay boys in this yeshiva in a certain place nearby to come daven, to come make a minion for them. So what are you going to say about that? So now you have to be careful. If it's some way you could attribute it to something you did during the week. Let's say they need you Friday night. So you'll come Friday, so you had to get there before Shabbos in order to be there for the minyan. So you had to travel. You had to make the effort to get there. That's fine. But what if they want you Shabbos morning for Shacharis? If they want you Shabbos morning for Shacharis, so you're not going to go in advance. You just show up for Shacharis. So what do you do? So this is an issue. This is an issue of Schar Shabbos. So for that, so the Havlah Heter is lost. So now, what you need to come on to is the heter here in the Shulchan Aruch, Yesh Mi Shematir, that there are those who permit for a Dvar Mitzvah. But that's not such a simple thing. But it's brought, nevertheless, that Rav Eliyashiv said that B'di'evet, a person could rely on the second opinion and be lenient. So therefore, if it comes down to it, a person is allowed to take money for that also. But preferably, that situation, you should try to work out some deal that you could avoid it. just in conclusion, just want to say situations where this does not apply, a doctor providing services on Shabbos is 100% allowed to charge for it. There's no question. You don't have to come on to any heterim. That's because there's a separate heter that shalotehe machshilo lasid lovo, that a person will say, well, if you're not going to pay me, theoretically, I'm not going to do it. So I won't do it in the future. So therefore, even though you say, well, what doctor would say that? But it you know, deep down, I feel you're taking advantage of me. So therefore, I might not run so quickly to do it. So when it comes to that, it's 100% muti. You don't have to come onto any shtick. You don't have to make havlas. You don't have to make anything. That's an outright heter, right? Other situations, it's you have to be careful. A very common situation which comes up with children or young children, teenagers, with babysitting. Right, babysit, you know, the woman wants to go, these young children, she wants to go to the Kiddush and Shul, she wants to go to Davin, whatever it may be, so she gets a babysitter to sit for her while she's going to Shul. So this is a tricky thing. Do you consider that a Dvar Mitzvah? So it depends. Maybe if it's to facilitate a mitzvah, a woman wants to go here, let's say, Parsha Zohar, a while back, or something like that, maybe you can construe it as a Dvar Mitzvah, but if she wants to go to a Kiddush, you can't really consider that a Dvar Mitzvah. And just to be aware that the Isser of Schar Shabbos does not only apply to cash payments, but even services for services. So your daughter will babysit for me this Shabbos, and my daughter will babysit for you next Shabbos, is also Schar Shabbos, also no good. So that, you really have to come, you have to give some thought to come up with a way that could be worked out. And finally, Reb Moshe Feinstein said that when it comes to accounts that are paid compounded interest on a day-by-day basis, there is no problem of Schar Shabbos because of the fact that the banks go by the secular day, not by the halachic day, and therefore you'll never have a situation where they're only paying you for Shabbos and not for the weekday also, because the 24-hour period, Friday is Friday till midnight, and Saturday is Saturday till midnight, so it includes periods before and after Shabbos, so therefore that would not be a problem. So in summation, this is the issue, and it does come up from time to time, and a person should just try to keep in mind what the parameters are. It usually could be dealt with, but a person just has to have the presence of mind to be aware of it and to know what I have to do and how I have to structure this, and if that's the case, we could usually avoid this issue.